Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for February 2nd, 2009. And on this week's episode, Ann Nicholson Weber interviews some of the artists behind Fires in the Mirror at the 16th Street Theater. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready. And let's talk theater.
You're listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. I'm Ann Nicholson Weber, your host this week. We're going to be talking about a show at the 16th Street Theater, Fires in the Mirror by Anna Deavere Smith, which is being performed by four women, two of whom are here with me today, Caroline Rao and Sherry Lynn, and it's directed by Anne Filmer, who is also the artistic director at 16th Street Theater. The show also features Kirsten D'Aurelio and Miranda Zola. Anne, I wonder if you could explain, for those who haven't ever seen any of Anna Deavere Smith's work, the origin of this piece and how she performs it.
Sure, I would love to. This is a piece that's part of Anna Deavere Smith's Identity in Motion, her On the Road, A Search for American Character. And I believe she's been working on this for about 30 years. This particular piece is centered on the Crown Heights, Brooklyn riots, racially charged riots that happened in 1991. And I guess I should tell you, because the audience may not know, that in Crown Heights, Brooklyn, we're dealing with two communities that live side by side. So you have this Hasidic Jewish sect, they're very strict, the Lubavitchers, who live side by side with African Americans, mostly from like West Indies. So you have Caribbean Americans and from Guyana. And so they're living side by side, but not integrating necessarily. And then a car accident that killed a black boy. And the car accident happened part of the Grand Rebbe, who was the leader of the Lubavitcher sect. It was in his entourage, and one of the cars swerved and killed this black boy, 7-year-old black boy, Gavin Cato. And that's what ignited what some say was going to happen at some point, because of all the tensions, because how differently these two groups of people live. So Anna Deavere Smith went and interviewed, I'm not even sure how many, I can't remember, but in this piece, we take on, there are actually 26 different characters, women and men, Jewish and black, and they all talk about identity or the crisis itself, and that's what it is.
Well, one of the unique things about her performance and yours as well is that she doesn't just learn the words, she learns and performs the exact intonation, accent, pauses, breaths. She essentially recreates in her own voice in person, and now you too are recreating in your own voices and bodies the transcript of these interviews. So it's a very, for an audience, it's kind of a striking effect, particularly knowing that it comes straight out of the tape, you know, essentially, as I say, like a recording almost, but that you're creating in the moment. So I wonder, starting with you, Sherry, if you could talk about that process, how you go about learning not just the words, but the sound and the shape of the original speaker.
It was a pretty intimidating process because of that. Because I think most actors will say that they have two, you know, there's two different schools of thought coming from the inside out, from the outside in. This is obviously from the outside in. I'm an inside out actress, so it was intimidating in that way of saying I'm going to put this on. and then see what happens. And actually, we sat down and we read her, the beginning notes of the play.
The introduction
of the play. And she said something that was really cool. You say a word long enough, becomes you. And that's where I started. And I trust her because this is her show, this is her process, and essentially this is her theater.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So when she says, just walk in the words, just walk in the words, eventually you'll get it. And that happened for me, mm-hmm. which was really interesting. Having been someone, I can create whatever I want. I can create the rhythms, the tones, the intonations myself. And I found it actually a little bit more freeing.
Interesting.
Than the other way.
So just to clarify, because I realize none of us has said this, Anna Deavere Smith listens, obviously, to the tapes of the original interviews. What you all had available to you were tapes of Anna Deavere Smith reenacting the tapes of the original interviews.
Yeah. But first, what we have is the script and the words on the page, and mm-hmm. it's actually written out almost like poetry. So you hear me speak right now. There are times when I'm pausing, which is not at the end of a sentence necessarily, or even a comma, mm-hmm. but for emphasis. Mm-hmm. And so if you wrote out what I was saying right now, you would see it on a page, not as in long lines that go to the end, but as in short, direct, sometimes italicized words, depending on how I'm speaking. That's how it's written in the script. And we also thought that maybe that was also due to a thought pattern, mm-hmm. if you will.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sherry, I wonder, just want to go back to the notion of the inside out versus the outside in, because it's a shorthand that actors use that I think a lot of people may not understand straight off. Could you explain that first, just what the distinction is, and then why this necessarily was outside in acting?
Inside out to me means that you start with the emotional life of a character with intentions and what are they thinking, what's going on, what's the surroundings, you know, back history, you know, forward history, where do they want to go? And you can make all these sort of emotional, psychological decisions as inner life. And then from there, I find clues to what their physical life is. And that gives me the rhythm, that gives me the pattern, that gives me all these things that would create a character. Mm-hmm. Outside in is like saying, you know what, I look at this character on the page or in the play, in the context of with these other people, they talk like this. They have this kind of cadence. They have this kind of rhythm in their body. I think maybe they're, you know, they hold themselves up taller and proud. I'm going to put that on, and then that's going to lead me to the emotional life and
to
the emotional
understand.
Core
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
the character. And
right.
that's what it means mm-hmm. to me. And in Anna's, and in this, I approach it like they're songs, like songs or poems, and then putting on that word and saying the word and saying the word and doing the intonations and seeing where that led me emotionally,
mm-hmm.
Which was, from my perspective, just a little scary because
yeah.
you don't know. I had no idea where it was going to go. And mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, I just had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it took away a lot of my own quirks.
Mm.
Because I think the other way around, the inside out, you have this tendency to want to do the things that are safe.
Well, I can imagine that, you know, take an emotion, excited. You, Sherry, have a particular way of being when you're excited, which
yeah.
may not be the same way that I am when I'm excited.
Exactly.
So if what you're creating is excitement inside and letting that play, I can imagine that that would be more Sherry-like.
Exactly.
Uh-huh, right,
exactly.
Right.
Than taking on someone else's physical manifestation of excitement, going,
mm-hmm.
oh, wow, I would never think of doing something like that. So it's, in a way, it's like putting on these masks.
I remember my son actually is an actor, and he was talking about he would look around the classroom and copy the posture of another child and discover how they were feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be an example of outside in. Mm-hmm. He
Absolutely.
Knows what they look like,
exactly.
and he discovers their inner life that
exactly.
way. Well, to try to make this a little more concrete, what the show is like, before we go any further, Caroline, I wonder if you would be willing to do just that excerpt we had talked about. This is, again, what you explain, first of all, how you learned this. Just describe the process, and then if you would perform it, I'd That'd be great.
Sure. Well, to kind of go back to what Sherry was talking about, I'm the exact opposite. I'm an outside-in actress. And so for me, I'm a lot like your son. I spend a lot of my time doing weird things that other people do and mimicking things and going outside. And then it comes, you know, the context, the emotional inner life of the piece will come out through that. So we met when we first got the script about a month before we actually started rehearsing. And during that month, I was sort of collecting the outer of each character. And like Sherry was saying, it's very intimidating. But for me, it's intimidating in a different way in that there's an actual person that people can look at and see, is she like Al Sharpton? Is she like Angela Davis? And this piece is interesting because he's anonymous. And so the only person I'm going off of is Anna. So I spent a lot of time watching movies that had people that reminded me of him, like Do the Right Thing, and just YouTubing people who were, you
explain
know,
who this is going to be.
Oh, this is going to be Anonymous Young Man Number One, who is a Caribbean young man who, when Anna performs it, he seems to have a sort of a combination of a Brooklyn accent with a Jamaican accent. And so I just kind of mimicked a lot of people that reminded me of him or that, you know, I felt like from his words would be like him. And then
you're listening over and over, I imagine,
and then over and
to
over,
Anna's
and,
performance.
And
of
then
him.
Mimicking. Mm-hmm. And then from that, I grew the inner life of Anonymous Young Man.
So let's hear Anonymous Young Man.
What I saw was she was pushing her brother on the bike like this, right? She was pushing him, and he kept dipping around like he didn't know how to ride the bike. So she kept running and pushing him to the side. So she was already running when the car was coming. So I don't know if she was running towards him because we was watching the car weaving and we was going, oh, yo, it's the Jew man. He broke the stoplight. They never get arrested. At first we was laughing, man. We was like, you see, they do anything and get away with it. And then we saw that it was out of control. And then we started regretting laughing because then we saw where he was going. First he hit a car, right? Tore the whole front fender off of our car. And then we was like, oh, my God, man. Look at the kids.
Thank you.
No problem.
So that's probably one of the few times in your life you're going to perform an adolescent Caribbean-American boy.
Maybe not. Who knows?
Whole new type of theater.
Right. So what is that like to do someone who at least outwardly and in situation is so different from you as opposed to what more likely happens in a conventional theater situation where you're cast because you look like and sound like the character?
I was actually talking to our other cast member, Kirsten, about this on the drive over. And I was saying, for me, it's easier in the sense that it's more concrete when it's not like you, because I can't do an imitation of myself very well. You know what I mean? I can copy other things that, like, for example, Al Sharpton has certain characteristics. And that's something that Anne helped us work with a lot, is finding the defining characteristics of a person, or what she calls them, the limitations. How does Al Sharpton hold his chin, and how does he hold his arms, and where is his voice set? And those three things are sort of constellations that can help you paint by numbers draw that person.
Any character, you just start with those particular three physical ways of being in a body.
Mm-hmm. And that's similar to how I've usually acted, which is why broader characters who are maybe more colorful and more different from me seem easier to me, because, an ingenue, a blonde young woman in her 20s is sort of vague to me. So it's hard to find, you know, how does that young woman hold her hands or her face. She's not a loud character. You know, it's very subtle.
That's interesting. Yeah.
So.
And also, Sherry brought up something maybe a couple weeks ago in rehearsal. I think maybe it was a conversation with your husband about perception. Because often when you're taking on someone, what jumps out at you, what do you perceive that person to be, right? You're not exactly. That's why I wouldn't really call it mimicry so much, because it's, for me, it's like the perception of that person.
Absolutely.
So if I were to take you on, Anne Weber, you know, it'd be right now, like, what jumps out at me as being the essence of you? It may not actually be maybe what even someone else sees, but it'd be like maybe your most extreme personality traits.
The most different from other people.
The way, right. Mm-hmm. The thing most different from me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And from
right.
other people, but right. definitely from me. And I would take those on and I would even exaggerate them because it's a perception.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like that a caricature kind of.
Right. When you, so when Anna, you, yeah. yeah, but not even that, because Anna Deavere Smith talks about, I'm showing, when she takes on these people, she is showing the audience the difference between her and that person. She is not trying to mold them into one person. Right? She's not trying to say, I'm Anna Deavere Smith and I'm also this Korean woman who owns a shop. She is showing the difference between her and the Korean woman through Anna's voice. I mean, obviously it's through mm-hmm. Anna.
And her body, right?
But mm-hmm. then through the Korean woman's words and her mm-hmm. intonations and the perception of her physicality at the mm-hmm. time. Mm-hmm. If that
makes sense. Right. We talk at home. My husband is a mimic. Mm-hmm. He can do, you know, voices, celebrity voices and stuff. So he struggles with, or not even struggles. He loves it. It's like it's a pyramid. You have yourself, and then you have the character down here at the bottom of the pyramid, or the celebrity, or whatever mm-hmm. you're doing the impression
and
of.
Acting, right?
Mm-hmm. And then up here at the top is where you two meet. Mm-hmm. And that's where the funny lives, or that's where the I can't take my eyes off you lives. It's that place where you get to see that person through them. Then you can see that person, then you see
that's
the other
right.
person. It's like this really delicate balance. Just to, you know, to toot the horn of my castmate here, I see it so clearly with her and Al Sharpton.
Oh, shucks.
Mm-hmm. It is... I have to stand there on. I'm standing there on the apron, and I have to force myself not to look at you mm-hmm. because you can see. I can see you clearly, and then I can see Al clearly, all at the same time.
Right.
It's like that's so cool.
Well, what's interesting to me, the effect of it for me. I was so glad you brought up this thing of impressions that are usually done for comic effect. It is really funny usually to see someone really different from Bush, sort of being Bush, and we recognize it, and the comedy is in the recognition. Mm-hmm. Anna Deavere Smith has used that same magical effect. When mm-hmm. someone is able to evoke this other person, you can see them. It, just as you said, Cher, you can see them clearly hovering in the air.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the effect of it was not for humor. It
no.
was for seeing what I felt was a kind of virtuous empathy
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
embodied.
Mm-hmm.
That that's two spirits kind of connecting through the actor mm-hmm. was so lovely and felt like this, as I say, a virtuous process. So mm-hmm. to me, that was really what the strongest effect of this type of theater was. We all four were at a lecture and performance that Anna Deavere Smith gave actually the night before your first preview, in which she did a few of these pieces that you then turned around and did the next day. And I'd be interested to hear what it was like to kind of see it from the horse's mouth, so to speak, and then perform it the next night. Maybe Caroline, you could talk about that.
Well, I had watched Anna Deavere Smith a lot on, you know, in different ways over the internet and videos and, you know, tapes before I'd seen her live. Mm-hmm. I actually saw her in the movie Rachel Getting Married the night after I auditioned for this role, and I was like, I gotta get it. So I, you know, I felt like, oh, I know what this is gonna be like. And then, you know, I wonder what your book has to say about this. When I saw her live, and I was kind of preparing myself like, oh, you know, she might not be the same way live. She might be, she's really famous. She might, you know, not be very nice. She might be frosty. I don't know what she'll be like. And the second she got on stage, I just started crying. And so did our assistant director who was sitting next to me, who's had the same kind of relationship with her through her work for a long time. And then, she did a shout out to our theater, and you know, she knew we were performing, and that really meant a lot for me. So I think to go back to what you're saying about the intersection between mimicry and the inner life of the actor and that kind of stuff, Anna Deavere Smith is such a powerful person to see, because you see how she is all those people that she performs. Mm-hmm. She seems like her energy just holds so much more than just one person. So it's overwhelming to hear her speak, you know, and to see her perform. And to go back to Al Sharpton, I remember the first night that we sort of had a little bit of an audience, a few people watching me perform Al Sharpton in his second monologue when he's talking about some heavy feelings he has of anger towards the Lubavitcher community about their lack of what he, you know, thought was their lack of response and empathy to Kevin Cato's death. And people were laughing in the audience and my feelings were really hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's a funny, you know, impression of Al.
Juxtaposition.
But, yeah. You know, I at that point I realized I had taken on his feelings about this, you know.
Right.
And so I think that's why Anna is such a just powerhouse of a person, because she's holds all these empathies for all these different people mm-hmm. in her one person.
Well, is there anything different? I mean, I've always imagined that an actor learns a little bit from every role that you play, from these people that you embody. You spend a little time literally walking in their shoes. Is it even more so when you go about it this way, where you have to be so meticulous about the details of how they live in the world, or is it really just the same process?
No, absolutely not. From the audition on, when looking at the audition on the call sheet on the computer, and then getting the sides, putting the sides up, and going, now what do I do?
What have I got myself into?
Because this is unlike anything I've ever done
uh-huh.
anything. So uh-huh. from the audition on, it was different.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that, and it happened to me in the audition when I was doing Al, I got lightheaded because I was taking the breaths where she was taking them. Because I was mm-hmm. like, well, you know what? I know what she does. I'm just going to do what Anna does. So I listened to the audio and I could hear where she's taking in these breaths. Mm-hmm. And I mark them on the script on my side, and I was taking these breaths, and I was like, I hope I don't pass out in front of this sand film.
I remember that. Wow, that's a lot of breath.
That's a lot of breath.
Uh-huh.
And then cut to 3 weeks later, or it took 2 months later, actually, and seeing Anna DeVere Smith and seeing how much breath she uses when she was working, I was floored.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to take in that much breath to be that committed to that impression, where it's not even an impression anymore. You are literally breathing in the person
mm-hmm.
and breathing them out fully. And Carolyn says she swims every morning, and that's obvious.
Not me, Anna DeVere Smith.
Anna DeVere Smith.
Caroline, I'm so impressed.
I sleep in.
But that's something that she does. She swims every morning. It's like, yeah, I can see that. You have to in order to take
breath control,
to have that much breath control and release mm-hmm. and be able to have the discipline mm-hmm. to release the word on the breath mm-hmm. the way she does. It's just, I was up in the middle of the night, lay up in bed thinking about her breathing.
Well, she is extraordinary. I want to pan back and talk now, Anne, a little bit about the decision to do this piece, which has such a unique life through Anna DeVere Smith. Now you say, okay, we're going to do it, and we're going to do it our own way. What were the things you were worried about? What was hardest about recreating it? Why did you use four actors? Why did you use all women?
Right.
Just talk about that.
So I'm a playwrights director, so I always go to the playwright for these answers. And when I take on a piece, do I have the right to do this piece in a way? Should I do this? Why this piece now? And I'm just going to read something very brief just from the introduction, that what she says about who can perform for who, who can speak for whom. If only a man can speak for a man, a woman for a woman, a black person for all black people, then we, once again, inhibit the spirit of theater, which lives in the bridge that makes unlikely aspects seem connected.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was really important. Obviously, Anna DeVere Smith is a black woman, so we have that one perspective, if you will. So I thought, well, I would like to do this with more than one woman. Instead of having just one woman take on these roles, how about have a mixture of women and not just one black woman and one Jewish woman, because you would have to have that at least, I feel. But how about also opening it up beyond the black and the Jewish world and have this tall, blonde German woman like Caroline come into the mix. And then Miranda Zola, to when she auditioned, she's also Jewish, but she has this great mix about her. Like, you know, she says she can get cast as a Latina, as sometimes she's Indian, and, you know. But I really wanted to see some diversity on the stage. And so it was really important to see and also to cast it so that, you know, we're not just going to have Sherry as an African-American woman play the African-American parts, but that each of these actors are going to portray people very different from them. They will each play a woman, a man, someone who's younger, someone who's just a more an anonymous resident, someone who is famous like Al Sharpton, someone who's an academic like Angela Davis, et cetera. And it was then important to, and then of course what we can do, because there are four of them as opposed to just one person, that we can maybe also give a little more. We can theatricalize a little more. Mm-hmm. Why not? It's the spirit of theater.
Well, why not men? Why not men?
Why not men? That's a good question. I think, you know, it always, I go a lot by intuition also. My intuition was always women. And then I had to think about why is that? And what I thought of, the last thing I want to see is a man putting on a dress and playing a Lubavitcher woman. Because there is some comedy that comes out in that that I felt like I couldn't get past. I'm not saying that someone could not get past it. And maybe that's going to be someone else's great experiment. Can we get past that? But I wasn't interested in that. I wasn't in, with all the other layers we were going to put on this piece, I didn't want to add that one more.
So you'd be fine. I mean, kind of to me, the spirit of the piece, it would be entirely appropriate to do that, because the whole notion is of anyone can access anyone's soul if they're careful enough about it. But I understand what you're saying, that there's a cultural inhibition that your audience, you as artists, I bet, could get through it. But you would be fighting a cultural inhibition, a very strong one still, that would have gotten in the way of saying what you meant to say. Is that, did I say what you meant correctly?
Sure, yeah, I think that's correct. You know, and also I just feel like it's interesting. You do a piece with all men, and normally the question is not asked, you know, why aren't there women in this piece? Not necessarily. You know, so I feel like women are always having to stand up, you know, often and say, where's the men? Or if you're doing something female-focused, that sometimes there is a question of, oh, wait, but what about the men? It's like, well, they kind of got enough to do, actually. And they do. There's plenty of great, 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 great roles through the history of theater for men all over the place. For women, there is not. There is not. There's like a handful, literally, don't you think? A handful of great roles for women where they are featured. So that's also an agenda of mine, I will admit.
But isn't it interesting that we can see a woman playing a man without that comic effect? I think that's surprising, but it's certainly true.
Kirsten, she said it when this came up, Kirsten Aurelio, she said that when the power class takes on the lower class, it's comic. But it's okay in our minds
the other way around.
For the lower class to ape the power class.
That is a much better reason. I like that. She's smart. No, she is. She's smart. It's true.
We're almost done, but I do just want to ask one last question, which is we just were touching on social inhibitions, and part of the reason that Anna Deavere Smith, as she said in her presentation at Columbia College the other night, she's interested in engaging race in a really honest deep way, and that is still clearly a cultural inhibition in many ways. So I'm interested in how that affected each of you. How did it feel for you, Sherry, to play a Jewish woman or a Jewish man? How did it feel for you, Caroline, to enact someone of color? I mean, again, these are things that we're very uncomfortable with still.
Oh, I can talk about that because I had a bad dream last night that I was babysitting Sherry's baby, and I think that's symbolic of, you know, as the white Anglo-Saxon woman in the show, that I, you know, have the most of that am I allowed to do this kind of feeling?
Somehow transgressive.
Because I'm not, you know, I'm the closest to the higher class or whatever, the power mm-hmm. class. Mm-hmm. So I think about that all the time. It's something I'm still struggling with, especially as we're getting closer to having more and more of an audience. I'm getting mm-hmm. more and more, oh my gosh, you know, what people are going to be mad at me. Mm-hmm. And I'm preparing myself. And I know that people will be mad at me specifically because what I said backstage is in some ways I'm doing a minstrel show without blackface. So, I mean, I'm excited for people to have those emotional responses to me and think about why they're having those emotional responses to my performance. And Anna Deavere Smith said, I'm sure you heard her when she said, we have to say the wrong thing, all the wrong things, so we can weave them together and mm-hmm. figure out what the right thing is. So it's scary to be the one who's, I mean, we're all taking a huge risk doing this, but so I'm scared.
But Caroline, you're not embodying a black person with no name. I mean, you're not taking on a person who is just black and that's who they are.
Oh, absolutely. It's a character. But, I mean, why is it so strange that, I mean, the first thing you said is this is probably the only time you're going to be cast as anonymous young man number one.
Right.
Why is it so strange? Because people are so uncomfortable, whether or not it's an anonymous black man mm-hmm. or Al Sharpton, mm-hmm. people are uncomfortable with a white woman playing those roles.
Well, how was it for you, Sherry? Did you is it less so, do you think, than for Caroline?
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I struggle with, I just, every night I have to make myself do it, is to say the ch and the Hasidic mm-hmm. when the rabbi says it, because that has been used, you know, it's been used against Jewish people, that sound. It's very mm-hmm. uncomfortable to make, and I feel like I don't have the right to make it. Mm. So every night I have to tell myself that the rabbi makes this, so you have to do it. You can't, there's no way around it. There's right. no, mm. And it's an uncomfortable, it's uncomfortable for me to do it. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
It's just the last thing. I know we have to stop, but there's something in the truth, and this is what Anna Deavere Smith spoke of the other night, is a truth and many truths. And obviously the rabbi speaks like that. That is how he speaks, and you are embodying that truth by doing that. And if we as a culture, as a society, are so upset by seeing and hearing truth when it comes out of another person, because, I mean, it's things that we have to confront, all of us, I mean, as actors, as artists, as audience members. And I think this piece allows us to do that. It may make us feel uncomfortable, and in a way, maybe that's the point, so that we can find out why we are feeling so uncomfortable with difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, to me, it seems that everything depends on the spirit in which it's done, and for a white person to imitate a black accent, for a black person to imitate a white accent as a way of making fun or emphasizing difference is completely different from the spirit that you and Anna Deavere Smith have created this piece, which the whole point is to reach inside that difference and to be empathetic.
Right.
Participate mm-hmm. in that difference mm-hmm.
rather than
to judge
it. That's what makes
it
so fun and exciting yeah. to be able to do it.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you, all of you, for being willing to take those risks and put this play up so that people can see it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of February 2nd, 2009. Disney's Emmy Award-winning mega-hit High School Musical sings and dances its way onto the Marriott Theater stage this March 10th through May 9th, and it is expected to be the hottest ticket in town. High School Musical is based on the most successful movie that the Disney Channel has ever produced. It follows the stories of Gabriella, a shy, brainy transfer student, and Troy, the hunky captain of the basketball team, as they discover their secret passion for singing. The original musical boasts a quadruple platinum soundtrack with hits like Breaking Free, What I've Been Looking For, and Start of Something New. High School Musical 2 was the highest-rated Disney Channel movie ever, and the High School Musical 3 currently holds the record for the highest-grossing movie musical in its opening weekend, earning over $80 million. To reserve tickets, call the Marriott Theater box office or follow our links at theaterinchicago.com. The smash hit musical Chicago is returning to Chicago for a limited run February 25th through March 8th at the Oriental Theater. It is starring Charlotte d'Amboise as Roxy Hart and John O'Hurley as Billy Flynn. Charlotte d'Amboise returns to the show after receiving her second Tony nomination for her performance as Cassie in A Chorus Line. With Chicago, she holds the record for playing Roxy more than any other actress, with more than 2,000 performances. Set amidst the decadence of the 1920s, Chicago is the story of Roxy, a housewife and nightclub dancer who murders her lover after he threatens to walk out on her, and the media sensation that follows. Chicago is the winner of 6 1997 Tony Awards, including Best Musical Revival, and also won a Grammy Award for Best Musical Cast Recording. The London production of Chicago holds the record as the longest-running American musical in the West End history. The Goodman Theater has announced a partnership with a small town in Austria called Linz that has been named the European Capital of Culture for 2009. The arrangement comes from a relationship between director Aida Carrick, who was a former resident with the Goodman, and the Goodman's literary manager Tanya Palmer. A new adaptation of the Joan of Arc story called Joan d'Arc will premiere in Linz in June and then here in Chicago next September. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank the artists of Fires in the Mirror for giving us the honor of interviewing them this week. I would also like to thank Ann Nicholson Weber and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And I would also like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I am your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.